Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome to the Mill Creek View Trademark Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Today, people making a change in our community. Today, we are happy to have for the A Block our monthly flyby with TennesseeConservativeNews.com editor Brandon Lewis. No relation to Joe Lewis, maybe Jerry Lewis, we'll ask him. Anyway, he's here for our Let's Go Brandon copyright segment. And later, very special guest, Jennifer Cabaney, editor-in-chief of collegefix.com. Wow, three editors-in-chiefs in one place. You're very welcome. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe so I can keep bringing you awesome and amazing content like this. Okay, first up today, it's that time of the month, my favorite time of the month, our Let's Go Brandon copyright segment. Brandon Lewis is the editor-in-chief of TennesseeConservativeNews.com. He can hold his breath underwater for 11 minutes, 21 seconds, has been banned on Facebook, has a wanted poster out with his photo on it in the halls of the Tennessee Capitol's Cordell Hull building because Democrats love him and rhinos in the Rhino Report hate him, or let's say don't appreciate him like I do. Benches 270, 30 times at the Combine. Some people liken him to a cross between Andrew Jackson, John J. Hooker, Michael Jackson, and a Memphis Hood. No, I won't go there. Let's go, Brandon. How are you today?
I'm great, buddy. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for all you do. We have so few people that cover conservative news in Tennessee at the state and local level, and we need all the help we can get. People are asleep at the wheel in the volunteer state, and it is our job to wake them up.
I think the two frames of you and I are just about it. You are absolutely right. For new listeners, which amazingly there are many now in no small part, thanks to you, sir, tell everyone in 60 seconds why TennesseeConservativeNews.com, typing in all those letters, or following you on Twitter is so vital to Tennessee.
Well, we are the volunteer state's only conservative news alternative, and we focus on Tennessee state government and local issues because the majority of conservatives know every time Joe Biden breaks wind and there are 11,000 articles written about it. Yet when things happen right up the road in Nashville that impact your constitutional rights, the economy, things of that nature, people are clueless. And so it's our job to separate fact from fiction as it relates to politicians promising one thing and yet voting in a completely different way.
Look at that. What a pro. 59.9 seconds. Okay. So first off, tell us about your Follow the Money report. And I think this week you have six Hall of Fame inductees to the Rhino Report: Esther Helton Haynes, John Crawford, William Slater, Dale Carr, Dave Wright, and John Holtzclaw, the Sinister Six, all voted to let Democrats vote in Republican primaries. Your headline, Bill Giving the General Assembly a Second Chance This Legislative Session to Heed the Will of Tennessee Voters Regarding Closing the State's Primary, failed in the House Local Government Committee. Do they not know Dems were the majority in the state only 10 years ago for like 100 years? Why even have a Republican Party, you know? Do they think this will help them stay in power, or will they just switch parties when it's politically expedient?
This one, so we have tried to get this done for years in Tennessee. And just to give you an idea, when you look on social media, you would think there is a huge difference of opinion about this among Republican primary voters. But we surveyed like 1,700 plus Republicans and asked them, should Democrats be allowed to vote in Republican primaries? And almost 98%, and I don't know what percentage of the remainder aren't just Democrat trolls that are on our lists, said, no, we don't want this. The SEC, which is the state executive council of the Republican Party in the state of Tennessee, has sent multiple letters to the Republican delegation up in the General Assembly saying, we don't want Democrats voting in our primary. And yet the six that you mentioned, whose faces we have plastered everywhere, voted to allow Democrats to do it anyway. And probably the most embarrassing part of this all had to be when Scott Golden, the chair of Tennessee's Republican Party, comes on bended knee to this committee explaining all of this to people and why it is a bad idea, and citing specific instances when Democrats, even Democrat candidates, voted in the primary for the other candidate, explained that this is not a good idea. And he was soundly embarrassed and ignored by this committee. And I think what the big takeaway from this is, Steve, when you do not hold your politicians responsible to vote with the platform and you let that go on for a decade, when you finally do need their help and you show up expecting them to listen to you, they ignore you because they understand, just as a child understands, when the parents don't take action, when the children misbehave, or in this case, the politicians, when they come up saying that you have to straighten up your act, they don't listen. And so to me, I think the next step is for the SEC and for Scott Golden to censure these people that voted to allow Democrats to vote in the political primaries and maybe even take away their party designation. But I doubt he has the you-know-what to do that because he's never stood up for other issues in the past, and this is where it leads.
Wow. All right, next headline. A bill with the very specific goals of guaranteeing every person's right to refuse a vaccine if it violates their religious beliefs was swiftly and with very little ceremony killed with no discussion or vote. Why did the Republicans want to kill us?
Well, you cited the Follow the Money report previously. And the big issue, and if you go to followthemoneyreport.com, you can download something that took Jason Vaughn hundreds of hours to compile. And basically, here's the issue. Those in Republican leadership presently in the General Assembly, their votes come from conservative primary voters inside of their district, but their money comes from outside of the district, primarily from special interests. And when you look at the special interest groups that fund both the Tennessee Republican Party, I'm talking about the party itself, and then the leadership, what you discover very quickly is that there are two categories that are right at the tippy top, and that is pharmaceutical companies and the medical lobby. And so at the end of the day, it's all about climbing the ladder up in Nashville, and it's very little about standing with the very obvious desires for medical freedom from your average Republican primary voter. It's just this great conflict between the votes and the money, and we're going to have to continue to report on this and ultimately replace some of these people in the 2024 primaries.
I think you're right. And if you let Democrats vote and kill off your base, you're not going to have a majority one day because, just survival of the fittest. We won't be here. All right. This guy has been doing an amazing job getting settlements from Google and joining other governors against big tech and whatnot. He was a child trafficking prosecutor in Memphis. The one cabinet member Governor Lee didn't pick, the Supreme Court did, which is unique to Tennessee. What are your thoughts on Attorney General Scarametti?
I would say it's too early to call, but I have seen him be more aggressive and less mealy-mouthed about important issues than the AG we had prior. Now, who knows? I am not a legal eagle. I don't know about the inner workings of the Tennessee Supreme Court or the judiciary to the point that any of our listeners and subscribers do. But from what little I have seen so far, he seems to be more aggressive and assertive. And as it relates to big tech, we've got some great bills coming down the pike that hopefully will stop some of the social media censorship or at least give them pause in Tennessee. And the fact that we've got somebody who's already done similar things in the AG makes me feel better. But time will tell.
Yeah, it's nice that he's not beholden to the governor like the Penny Schwinn or the new healthcare czar that came from Kentucky as opposed to maybe Kansas, one of those places with a K instead of right here in Tennessee. And he's from here. Okay, next headline. So we know this was on the table a few years ago with Senator Janice Bowling 3 years ago and died in committee, but Matt Walsh at Daily Wire made it national. And all of a sudden, it's a five-alarm fire, all hands on deck. The headline is Left Threatens, by the way, these are all TennesseeConservativeNews.com headlines that we're talking about today. Left threatens lawsuits after Lee signs bill protecting children from gender mutilation and exposure to sexually provocative drag. Your friends on the left, all 24 of them, can pack up the VW van and hightail it to Colorado, and Republicans would still have a quorum up there. So no grease, squeaky wheels, but yet we got that through.
Well, it's a The thing that, and I've said this before, the sad thing about this bill, again, is that Janice Bowling brought it 2 years ago, and rhinos in Republican leadership thought she was crazy and shot it down. I mean, we can't even get Republicans to keep Democrats out of our primaries. And when the Freedom Caucus came to Tennessee, there were so few conservatives in the General Assembly that they said, we can't set up a caucus here because there's not enough of you to do it. And that's how bad it is. We've got a very thin veneer, Chamber of Commerce veneer, meaning they'll keep the taxes low and they'll make it very friendly with both corporate welfare and regulations to have things in this state. But that's about it. On legal immigration, on abortion, as we see them now trying to dismantle the nation's strongest abortion ban, rhinos, it just points back to it. So back to this. It was an issue previously. Janice Bowling and others brought it. It was killed in committee. And then instead of doing what I think was morally correct and appropriate, which is to let people that tried to stop it the first time come up and get the credit for it, you have all the rhinos run in who, if they had not had egg on their face because of Matt Walsh nationally, they would have never done a damn thing because they are in the pockets of the medical lobby and the establishment. I'm glad that this happened, but I don't think it came from the right place. But at the end of the day, the law is the law. It'll save a bunch of kids from having terrible, horrifying experiences they can't come back from. And for that, I'm grateful.
You know, the victims over the last 2+ years before it became a national shame, we suffer, you know, feel bad for them. And it's not unlike, and I didn't bring it up as a headline, but it's not unlike trying to water down the strongest in the nation abortion ban because, I don't know, 900 children a month being saved by it. Now that's too many. They have to go the other direction. And that's not a conservative thing. All right, next headline. I can't believe this even has to go before these ladies and gentlemen up there. We have no shame in the culture part of Andrew Breitbart's line, culture is upstream from politics. Here's a perfect example. Bill to protect educators from forced usage of students' preferred pronouns passes House Education Committee. I like the cartoon of the little boy raising his hand and asking, what is a pronoun? All of a sudden, pronouns became like the nouns of 2023. How did we get here in Red Tennessee? And I see the rabid, insane reaction on social media from the Tennessee left. And it reminds me of an angry gangster using a squirt gun to, you know, to hold up a drugstore, totally feckless.
So there's a number of things here that are just hilarious to me. The first is our kids can barely read and write in Tennessee. Only 30 some odd percent of them can read at grade level, which means 70 some odd percent of them can't. So they wouldn't know what the pronouns are because they're not being taught, although the liberal professors certainly understand it. So that the I think the saddest commentary about all this is the fact that Tennessee schools not only are academically bankrupt, but they are so corrupt and in such government indoctrination factories that they have to pass this. The best way I think that Tennessee primary voters that are Republicans can think about this, if you went to a restaurant, if we had a series of government restaurants, and if they had to pass a bill that said that people can no longer piss in the soup, can't piss in the soup anymore, would you go to that restaurant? Would you send your kids to that restaurant if pissing in the soup is so commonplace that you have to pass a law against it? And so that is the situation we have in Tennessee public education. It is so corrupt and is so terrible, and the deliverables are so bad, and the expenses are so out of line with the return that taxpayers get, that we need school choice. We need to just refund the money back to the parents. They need to close these failed experiments down and move on to the next thing. Am I glad they did it? Yeah. Can this be saved as an institution? Doubtful.
Agreed. All right, last one. This is a story you broke originally. Congratulations and thank you for doing it. And now it's a scandal and maybe something is getting done, like the Matt Walsh situation. Tennessee children will no longer be housed in DCS offices, religious groups credited for change. Not a religious group. Your news organization, but it's okay. We got it done. What's the story on why this made it all the way to the assembly's radar to get them to act?
Well, there has to be about a five-alarm fire for those rhinos to get their nose out of the corporate trough and do anything that's conservative up there. And when they do it, it's primarily for theatrics and for recognition. But they just, DCS is a train wreck in Tennessee. It has been for years. The government can't educate your kids. They can't pave the roads. They can't be caretakers for them either 24/7, and they can't be parents. And so it got so bad, and the turnover has been so terrible, and the conditions in which these children have been kept, both inside government buildings and offices and in the foster care system, that finally some religious organizations have stepped up and said, hey, if y'all are abusing the kids and putting them in bad situations, and if the government can't help, we will. And I think it's a step in the right direction. Is it a perfect step? No. We do have some bad news right now. There's a bill that's going through the House and the Senate that I've been opposed to that DCS is pushing, and that's where your children can be taken away from you by an anonymous complaint, And there's no recourse if it's unfounded, and there's no due process, which is against the Constitution in Tennessee. And we have Republicans pushing this. And there are so many examples of a couple getting divorced and the child becoming the pawn and becoming the instrument by which somebody can hurt the other party when no other avenues are available to them because it's the last vestige of communication between the two individuals. And that's primarily what this has been abused for. But we have lobbies up in Tennessee from the government that are stronger than the lobbies from the citizens. And that's why we have situations like this. DCS is a travesty, and I would not trust them with anybody's kids. And the fact that they're supposed to advocate for the children, given their track record, I just don't buy it. It's very troubling, but I don't know who else is going to step in here. But at least we have some nonprofits that are separated, and hopefully they will not be as bad in their decisions with the kids. I hope not for their sake.
No, and as we've seen, some intrepid reporter could, if they could get close, might discover that there's a profit motive behind that, and the cartels are the ones who benefit, and it's not a good thing. Bill, let's go. Thank you for your time. We appreciate you here, even if Nashville doesn't. It goes too fast. Please tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and follow you.
Do look for Tennessee Conservative on Twitter and anywhere you get social media. We're still on the free speech platforms, although Facebook has turned us down like a dorky kid asking for a prom date. And they've also turned us down on a lot of other platforms than YouTube, but the free speech platforms, you can find us and go to TennesseeConservativeNews.com, hit that subscribe button and look for Tennessee Conservative wherever you get your podcasts. I do one show called The Big Seven every week that keeps people up with the biggest stories. And when I get around to an interview, I do one of those about every other week. I'm not as prolific as Mr. Abramowitz. I'm not as steady. So if you really want good interviews, you probably need to hang in there with him. But I just give you the straight news every Friday.
You probably don't have as much free time either. But thanks again for coming on with us. We'll see you again next month, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today we are talking to Jennifer Kubani. The Student Free Press Association is a nonprofit organization run by veteran journalists to help beginning journalists. With their higher education news website, The College Fix, they work with college-age writers with the purpose of identifying and supporting young people who seek to improve campus journalism, explore careers in the media, and commit themselves to the principles of a free society. They tell stories, spot talent, and nurture careers, offering one-on-one mentoring and journalism fellowships. This talent pipeline then supplies media companies across the nation with smart, talented, and driven young reporters who seek to advance truth-telling within the Fourth Estate. Jennifer Kubani is editor of The College Fix. She was a visiting fellow with the Independent Women's Forum in 2021. From 2022 from 2002 to 2013, she worked in various capacities for the North County Times, now the San Diego Union-Tribune, newspaper as a City Hall education and features reporter, as well as a weekly education columnist. Previously, she served as associate editor of Front Page magazine, as well as held editorial positions at the Weekly Standard and the Washington Times. She's also a Robert Novak Journalism Fellowship recipient and has contributed to National Review. Jennifer graduated from San Diego State University, where she served as editor-in-chief of the Daily Aztec. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for coming on with us. You picked an interesting time to be covering colleges.
Absolutely. It's good to be here.
Thank you. They've gone insane, haven't they?
Yes, absolutely. The inmates are running the asylum.
Let me quote you to yourself. I always like when that happens. The left may clamp down on conservative speech on campus and liberal views may dominate most newsrooms, but Jennifer Cabani is fighting to change that one news article at a time, the Washington Times said about you. Is that your plan?
Well, we actually have two primary missions. The first is to serve as a canary, as a coal mine to parents, students, watchdogs, lawmakers, think tank, policy wonks, everybody who wants to know what's going on, what's really going on colleges and universities today, can read our daily news website, The College Fix, which is focused on higher education and covers all those hot button topics, the cancel culture wars, free speech, due process, toxic masculinity, white privilege, critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, you name it, we're covering it. And then underscoring that, we train undergrads how to be truth-telling reporters. We have them cover their own campuses as well as colleges and universities across the nation. They work closely with us. We assign their stories and edit their work and train them up to get both sides of the who, what, where, when, and why. Then we help launch their media careers. We offer internships and networking opportunities.
That's fantastic. As a owner of a small newspaper, I know how difficult that is to actually find, especially the ones that don't just want to go to Wikipedia, cut and paste, and call it a day. So I very much appreciate your stories. You know, it's 10 to 1 K through 12 in colleges in America that were started by Christian believers from Yale to Stanford and Cal. Why have the universities lost their way?
Well, right now, the founders of Yale and Harvard must be turning over in their graves to see what has become of their beloved institutions, because they have done a 180. And the main reason why the colleges and universities are now basically leftist indoctrination camps is because socialists and democratic progressives and liberals, not classical liberals, because believe it or not, we have a few things in common with some free speech classical liberals, but the far left used campuses as a tool to convince, train up, indoctrinate, and educate people in their way of thinking and their way of seeing the world, so that they become, you know, vote how they want, say how they want, share what they want on social media, basically buy into the claptrap of the left. I think it was Lenin who said, give me your child for 4 years and I'll have him for a lifetime or something like that. But the point is the left wisely understood that campuses, K-12, as well as colleges and universities, are one of the most important battlegrounds for the heart and mind and the soul of young people and thus our nation.
Yeah, they have them for 40 hours a week, a captive audience. And to your point, for every Naomi Wolf or Robert Kennedy Jr., you've got all the Antifa arrest reports that show these were teachers actually in the mob that have your children Monday through Friday, but then decided to burn down buildings on Saturday and Sunday. I made a mistake. I quoted the Washington Times, but I want to quote you when you said, I always say it's a website dedicated to higher education along with a conservative campus newswire, said Mrs. Cabani, the site's editor. It might mean a little extra pizza money for some, but it's also a way to flesh out a budding resume, generating a stack of clips and show you how to write, pay attention to detail, and meet a deadline. You don't see that in the mainstream media, let's call it, the MSNBCs, the slick-produced Fox News. Your website is actually teaching them the who, what, why, where, and how of journalism. That makes you special. Did I have that about right?
You do have that right. See, I grew up in a time where you actually got your news and your front driveway. I put on my bathrobe and I have my mug of coffee and I walk out. That's how I got my news. I remember those days. And so I actually was trained up as a journalist, you know, covering City Hall and school board meetings and the local parade and the local planning commission meeting. And I learned the daily grind. I earned my stripes on just local news coverage and just how to develop sources and, you know, get both sides. And so these are the kind of old school journalism attributes that myself and my fellow editors are teaching these young people, you know, that to just let the story speak for itself, just quote both sides. I would say the subjectivity is in what we see as news, as opposed to how we cover the news, because we're still just laying out the facts. But for example, what we might report on mainstream legacy media might ignore, or the normal campus newspaper might ignore, but the College Fix sees it as news. For example, just on an example today, we had a story about the folks that shouted down Ann Coulter at Cornell last winter. Well, the university promised that they were going to be, these disruptors were going to be disciplined for their behavior. You know, 4 months later, they refused to say whether, if at all, these students were punished. That's the kind of story we follow up on and try to hold colleges accountable, whereas probably the mainstream Cornell campus newspaper could care less whether these students ever got disciplined.
Yeah, they'd rather see it go away than be reminded that the chancellor ran out the back door in a panic when the mob came for him. Have you covered the revivals going on at 30-plus schools like Asbury in Kentucky and Lee here in Tennessee?
Yes, we did. We reported on what was going on there. Again, just from a secular perspective, saying, you know, here's this revival, this encounter with God that these young people are having, it's spreading. So we just did a very matter of fact article. But I will say, just as an observer, I logged into the live stream of Asbury because I was curious myself. And, you know, you could really feel the sincerity. You could feel, I mean, even watching it on the live YouTube stream, I could feel the sincerity in the presence of the Holy Spirit. So that's something we do. We cover the positive stories as well, and we try to get those out there, the free speech victories, the revivals, you know, the students fighting the good fight. So we're covering, you know, the whole spectrum of campus stories that need to get out there.
That's good, because I think it's a great story, because we have heard for so many months, if not years now, the negative of what's happening on the woke college campuses and the anti-white structures that are being built over the doorways of my old alma mater. And to have something positive like that finally being seen by our youth, the Gen Zs, that was very heartwarming. So I'm glad that you are covering that. And you also said music to my ears, because my newspaper is delivered door to door by 8 to 14-year-olds the old fashioned way. And that's the only reason why it's been around since 1991. We don't want to be fly by night, 1 hour a night on cable news, and then you forget what was said. Speaking of that, you've got a huge roster of student reporters. I looked at it online. How are you teaching them to not be like Don Lemon on CNN or MSNBC or even ESPN and all their wokeness, and be more like tough, straight journalists of the old days?
Well, one of the first things we tell them is we don't want them to write opinion for us. So, you know, I tell them they don't have the solution to the Mideast peace crisis. It's been going on for 2,000 years, right? Just tell us what's going on in your own backyard. And so we really emphasize with the students that come to us that you want to learn straight news reporting. You want to learn newspaper style reporting. And oh, yes, they really do. Because, you know, there's attention to detail. You know, you have to dot all your I's and cross every T. So this is a really important training ground, not only if the students want to go into journalism, but frankly, you know, pre-law, politics, communications, public relations, you know, think tanks. Writing well is a skill that young people need to have. And so we work hand in hand with them. We edit every line that they turn in. And, you know, it's a process, a back and forth process, so they can learn and grow and improve with each story we assign them.
That's great.
And they can give us stories too. I mean, it's a two-way street. We hope they're the eyes and ears on campus as well for us.
And the whole idea that a big roster like you have even wants to do that kind of journalism, as opposed to be the kind who's running around in the hurricane with a microphone and sticking it in someone's face and telling them that they know better than the 80-year-old, you know, World War II vet. That's a fantastic stable of people to have for their communication skills for the future. You don't get that as an intern at CNN, I don't think.
Yeah, there's such a need for good, honest, reporters, even centrist or center right or libertarian reporters. We just need people willing to report the news
right.
and stop trying to convince and tell people what to think. Just let the viewer decide, the reader decide. It's really sort of frustrating now to really find any just sort of factual straight news. We try to really temper our reporting. I tell the kids there's no need for hyperbole. There's no need for exaggeration. Frankly, campus news surpassed satire long ago. I mean, we can't make this stuff up. It is absurd. So there's just no need to pump up the volume on any of our stuff. It's quite ludicrous already because the things that are going on college campuses nowadays are unfathomable. Just to, you know, someone who went to school, you know, 20 years ago.
And it's really great to see the amateur, not immature, but amateur writing that you guys do versus, say, the slick and polished and then filtered and then screened out and then passed amongst a whole bunch of MBAs to determine, can we actually say this and not have Rupert Murdoch call down from above and yell at us? You know, just report the news, not the opinion that we know. Most of the anchors now have a bias. They go to the same cocktail parties in DC or New York or LA. We know what they're going to say versus what's the story and what do they not want us to see, especially in the age of heavy censorship. How did you get interested in journalism in your early days besides picking it up off of your front lawn?
You know, I went to a city college, community college, after I graduated from high school. And frankly, it was one of the best decisions I ever made because it allowed me to take my time with some electives. I really didn't know was I going to be. I knew I didn't want to do math. Okay, I sucked at math. So I was like, no, I can't do that. But I took some electives at the community college, you know, waited tables, paid my way through college, you know, learned how to work hard and just enjoy life and discover my aptitudes. And when I finally stumbled across a journalism class, it was the easiest A I'd ever gotten in my life. I mean, I could have gotten the A in my sleep. I said, well, clearly I need to stick with this. And the rest is history. I was at Santa Barbara City College and I worked for the Channels, which was the campus newspaper there. And then I transferred to San Diego State. And my senior year, I was editor-in-chief of the Daily Aztec. And I just stayed in journalism from there. It's a lot of fun, you know? It's one of those things where you're a jack of all trades, master of none, in the sense that every day, a new story that I'm working on, I kind of have to master that topic for the day, take a deep dive into what I'm covering that day. And then the next day is just something completely different. So every day brings new adventure, new information, new insights, new education. So it's a really fun career, especially if you know how to write well, which over the years, I finally think I got the hang of it.
Yeah. And I think that's great. That's the way to start because you know that the big money being thrown at the Sean Hannitys of the world, keep them in Manhattan, in their studio. They don't get out and talk to the people. They don't go anywhere else. Even with CNN leaving Atlanta, all we're ever going to see is that filtered New York perspective on the entire rest of the country. They don't have anyone in Wichita, Kansas, or here in Franklin, Tennessee, telling the true story when it breaks. So it's just great that you have so many campuses. How many campuses do you actually have reporters on? Do you know?
Well, we have roughly 75 active student reporters.
Wow.
So, I mean, at least 75 report, but we often assign students articles based on a college that they're not attending, but they can email the campus spokesperson. They can email the professors and students involved. So one of the good aspects of technology is it really broadened our horizon, what we're able to do in terms of covering stories that are, you know, beyond our reach physically.
That's great. Okay. Some schools to this day are still mandating masks and vaccines, even with the peer-reviewed science proving neither work. They're obsessed. Why this degree of obsession, do you think, at the health level on the campuses?
Well, what we've seen on college campuses, and it's not only with the COVID, the onerous COVID regulations, but also just this general nanny state of, you know, providing students with safe spaces, telling them that they don't, that if they get their feelings hurt, that that's a bad thing, that that's a wrong thing. They've learned wrongly that hate speech is not free speech. Actually, in fact, hate speech is free speech in America, you know, but define hate speech for me, because one, you know, 20 something liberal student's hate speech, you know, could be like, you know, saying something like, I believe in the First Amendment. That's like hate speech to them now.
Yeah,
so it's really
violence
hate speech
now,
is, yeah, exactly. Come a long way.
The ACLU used to defend all sides of space.
Yeah,
They even
that's another organization
protected
that's
the
taken a
Nazis.
180. I mean, how they're completely antithetical to what they originally stood for, which it's really sad, actually. Now there's the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, I think, has kind of usurped the ACLU in defending First Amendment freedoms.
That's right.
But back to what you've mentioned about, the universities, that they are coddling these students, treating them with kid gloves, just sort of like, the participation trophy generation and the helicopter parenting that we've seen is then extended to these college campuses. And we've created a nation of wussies. I mean, it's really sad. I
Yeah.
worry for our country.
All right. So you're saying instead of just taking them on board like nannies and saying, eat your broccoli, take your vitamin C, oh, and get vaccinated because that's the healthy mandate from above, that you're it's just the
Look,
same
the
kind of
vaccine thing,
coddling
I will
them.
say this, it makes no sense because we know that the vaccine does not stop transmission. So when is the insanity going to end? I mean,
Exactly.
especially for young men who studies have shown there's a higher risk for complications. So I, as a parent, I would never allow my students to, my son, to be forced in that situation. If I'm the paying customer, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that kills me is like, you're the paying customer. You have to take a stand.
Well, Notre Dame was forcing them to take it whether they were online learning or on
It's
campus.
in
Every
that well,
it
that just shows how
and
insane it is. And that
it's
just
not
shows
about
it's not
science or
about
health.
science, it's not about health, it's about control. It's about, again, to a certain extent calling the students, but also teaching them that they must obey.
But it's often about money, and you can Google or DuckDuckGo just about any college, and the letters NIH, USC NIH, UNC NIH, Stanford NIH, whatever, and see all the billions of taxpayer dollars directed to these research centers, far in excess of what they're getting in tuition from parents. Do you think we're getting to a point to where parents and alumni have finally figured out what they're doing with their money, like six-figure DEI hires and CRT books? And the money in gifts and enrollments are dropping.
Yes, there is a growing awareness among alumni that they need to stop sending all of their endowment, all their money to beef up these endowments because recently there's been two dozen different alumni groups that have sprung up in the last, I'd say, year and a half that are fighting back and they're telling their fellow alumni, don't give to these schools because, and they'll forward articles from the College Fix or some of their own discoveries, but they're starting to talk amongst themselves and communicate these alumni groups and say, hey, we got this, enough's enough. We got to draw a line in the sand. We have to vote with our wallet and talk with our wallet. And they've come to realize that's the only thing that matters to these universities. Follow the money, whether it's like you said with the NIH grants, with the alumni stopping to give. And then like here's a perfect example at MIT, they just hired a new president. She came on, her name is Sally Kornbluth, and she came on January 1st. And now she recently rolled out a brand new free speech program where she's gonna, they're gonna defend free speech and they're gonna allow it to happen. And that is only because of a very strong MIT alumni group that's just been hounding the school over and over to demand better free speech protections for faculty and students. So it's making a difference. Do I think it's going to be the ultimate solution to the problem? That would be wishful thinking because the
Yeah.
rot runs deep.
Not right
But
away,
at
that's
least
for
people are
sure.
fighting back, and that's a good start.
That's true. Cancel culture and kangaroo courts on campus was a thing even before COVID. Are you still seeing falsely accused boys unable to defend themselves on campus?
Not to the extent that we did. I mean, I got to tell you, from like 2014 to 2016, those 2 years, it was like a lawsuit was filed every week almost by a young man who claimed he was wrongfully accused. Because you have to remember, the Obama administration loosened the definition of assault, basically, and made it almost near impossible for young men to defend themselves. They couldn't confront their accuser sometimes. They weren't allowed to have an attorney present sometimes. Sometimes they weren't even given access to the documents or materials that were accusing them of whatever. They didn't even know they were in the dark. So we saw over 200 lawsuits filed during that time frame. It's definitely decreased, but I'm starting to see it slowly but surely pop up again, thanks to the Biden administration, which basically is trying to roll back those Obama era policies, which were utterly disastrous.
Roll
so
back
it's something
to
to
the
keep
future.
An eye on.
They want to bring them back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump
Yeah.
rolled them back and they want to return.
Yeah.
Them.
Under DeVos, Betsy DeVos, she did a massive, you know, public information campaign, brought in speakers, brought in people to testify, and they did it the right way and they rolled them back. And then Biden put in the same lady that had messed it up the first time. So it's just, it's
same
frustrating.
Boss. Boss, same as
but
the
you
old
know what?
Boss.
I have to say, these young men, my heart breaks because I interviewed a lot of them. I interviewed the young men, I interviewed their parents. I mean, these are young men. A lot, oftentimes, they were in athletics. They had dedicated their lives working hard. They had made sacrifices. And then one bad choice, whether it was, you know, a drunken hookup or, you know, not calling the girl back the next day. That nowadays was, you know, that was becoming, unfortunately, almost, you know, the lady got mad and next thing you knew, she was taking advantage of the resources she had. So it was devastating. Lives were destroyed.
Yeah.
Careers were destroyed. So it's not, I mean, we can joke, but it's really not something to be taken lightly. And it's disheartening to say the least that Biden would want these policies back in place.
And the reason I even bring it all up is because the Duke lacrosse case was one of the first national ones to break. And obviously they were guilty before proven innocent, ultimately proven innocent, or at least not enough hearsay to make them guilty. But it was the Rolling Stone magazine, technically a competitor of yours, since you kind of go for the same age group, who pushed that whole lie. And I think they ended up having to make a big settlement. So it would have been better for them to tell the truth or walk away from that story than to double down and make it such a terrible thing that obviously hurt those kids more than anybody else. Next year is an election year. So the pandering in chief will be out in force soon. Do you think we'll revisit free college? And what about this stupid cancel $400 billion student loan bailout plan in the courts? I'm not too happy to pay for other kids' college. I got my own to worry about. What do you think of all that?
So the Supreme Court recently heard debate for and against whether Biden's $400 billion student loan bailout is legal. And so they're going to weigh in on that. And, you know, it sounds like a majority of justices are skeptical that Biden had the constitutional authority to just wipe away that debt. And it sounds like most agree Congress needed to be involved in that decision-making process. So we can hope that, you know, that policy is rolled back. And you're right, you shouldn't have to pay for, you know, somebody else's. Not only that, these kids don't necessarily all have to go to college. I mean, they're taught, well, if you don't go to college, you won't be successful, when there are so many different pathways. You know, there's the armed services, there's vocational
I think
training.
It's only 25% of the kids do go to college, right? Isn't that the graduation rate, 25%?
I would have to look into that. I don't have that data readily available. But
It's not a majority of people, that's for sure, that actually go to college and earn a degree.
But they tell the kids that if they don't, they won't be successful. That's what. And meanwhile, there's blue
collar
jobs. So
the cost of $2 trillion of debt.
Yeah. But like we just did an article where there's blue collar jobs, very high paying blue collar jobs, that are sitting empty because they have nobody to fill them, because the universities are churning out, you know, gender study degrees.
Degrees
and that can't fix
that
your house
exist.
when the flood comes, or, you know, when you have, you know, a plumbing problem, that won't fix your house.
That's perfectly well said. Exactly right. Jobs that don't exist, degrees in things that just don't matter.
But the thing with Biden, you know, going around, you know, trying to cancel people's debt, isn't that how the Democrats operate? They just buy votes. I mean, that's literally, they're like Santa Claus going around saying, you know, vote for us and you won't have to pay for this and you won't have to worry for that, and we'll take care of this and we'll take care of that. I mean, we're up against a philosophy here.
It's the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren constituency. They basically promise to give them free college and they vote for them and they never deliver, but yet they get reelected. Yeah, exactly. It's a scam. And speaking of that, what do you see is the role of union bosses, college administrators like presidents and trustees, and their tolerance of all this nonsense, like bathrooms, CRT, Vanderbilt Medical was performing gender change surgery on minors. The boards have to sign off on it. There are a lot of board members at a lot of schools. So unions and administrators, what do you make of them?
Well, I can tell you that I know there's a minority of trustees that are frustrated, but feel they can't do anything to really roll back what's going on. That's why what's going on in Florida is so interesting, because there's been legislation proposed that gives the boards of trustees and the president's power to hire and fire professors at will, to have a more active role in what's taught and what's required. You know, right now, professors are hired by other professors, and these hiring committees are as liberal as they get. And plus, there's quotas. You have to sign a diversity statement if you want to get hired or earn tenure. So what we're seeing in Florida is going to be really interesting, because there's an attempt to take back control of hiring from, you know, union bosses, faculty unions, faculty senates, and give it back to the rightful overseers of our universities, which are the trustees and the boards of governors. And so that's starting in Florida, but you're seeing it elsewhere, UNC, hopefully more in Tennessee as well. So we really hope that while those typical traditional unions and committees hold a lot of power, that people are starting to wake up and fight back. And DeSantis is leading the charge on that.
He sure is. And if they keep taking names of former donors off of there, they're going to lose a lot more of their support when they do terrible things like that. We got a few more minutes left. Back to the NIH money and other government funding. In Betsy DeVos's book, which you mentioned, and she was the Secretary of Education for Trump's full 4 years, we know it all comes with strings attached. Seems like the Department of Education is driving all of this. So taxpayer funding, child, call it abuse, call it, you know, whatever you want to call it, things that children should not have to deal with in 4 years of college that you're paying for. Do you think the Department of Education should be shut?
Oh, yes. Look, I don't need Washington to tell me how to educate my kids. Local control is the way that the founding fathers had envisioned it. And the Department of Education has been nothing but disaster. Test scores are down. I read recently IQs are like lower than they've ever been. We're just dumbing down America. They've done nothing to help. And every policy that comes out just seems to be trying to shove a square peg in a round hole. Let the local, you know, authorities, the school boards and the local regional folks control their schools. They know what their region needs. They know what their populations need. And get Washington out of your kids' classroom.
Absolutely. That's well said. So last question, there are a few level-headed professors out there. I see like Victor David Hansen and Dr. Atlas at Stanford, but only a handful, really. They've chased them all away. All the conservatives have been chased away. I did some quick searching for you. There are about 4,000 colleges in the U.S., a pretty average-sized college like University of Washington near producer Steve, where I used to live, has 15,000 employees, okay? Wow, I mean, if that's a typical, that's 60 million people employed, well, not that many, but it's, let's say, a lot of lunatics around pushing all this garbage. How come there hasn't been more pushback? And there are 23.7 million full-time and part-time employees of our government. So combined, we're talking about 75 million little Stalinists out there to get us. You know, God help us. How, I guess the question is, do you see the hiring practices changing anytime soon where they would open it up to more centrists, or is it just going to be a bubble of far left ideology on the college campuses as a majority, generally speaking?
So is there any hope? Is that what you want to know?
Yeah. In conclusion, what's the optimism?
Yeah, the outlook is grim. yeah, there's people fighting the good fight. And, you know, there are good professors out there. More than you really know. They just keep their heads down and their mouths shut because they don't want to become the next campus target. So truly there are good people doing good things on college campuses. There's excellent learning going on. STEM is being infiltrated, but still, thank goodness, mostly intact. They're working hard to take that down too. But the bottom line is we have people fighting the good fight. We at the College Fix, the students that I work with, they're inspirations. I mean, they give me hope for the future. I know there's so many parents out there that have yanked their kids out of these public schools. They're homeschooling. They're paying out of their pocket for private school, even though their state doesn't offer vouchers. I mean, we're fighting the good fight, and we will until we don't anymore. I mean, until they literally keep us in our houses and tell us everything that we can think and say and do. I mean, that's what they want, really, if you think about it.
All right. But I'm going to go into overtime with this last question, but editor to editor, yes. ChatGBT, ChatGBT. ChatGBT refuses to write poem admiring Trump, produces poem praising Biden. Why will kids need college? And why will colleges need human being professors with tenure earning six figures with that AI now? And why will you and I need reporters when we could just ask ChatGPT to write the report for us?
Well, have you seen that ChatGPT is completely biased and it won't answer any conservative questions or it won't give you any conservative responses? So God help us if we rely on that AI machine to give us our information. I mean, you think things are bad now. And actually, this is the AI issue is a really scary precursor of possible things to come. But if these young people rely on ChatGPT, they're just going to be stupider than ever, and we're all screwed.
So. I was hoping that's what you'd say. There is going to be a place for you and I always in truth telling. So thankfully you are there. Thankfully we are here. Jennifer, thank you for coming on with us. I hope to have you on again sometime if you had a good time. We do appreciate you. We are at the end here, so please tell everyone where they can go find out more about you, College Fix, and your socials.
So we're at thecollegefix.com, and you can sign up for our biweekly newsletter. I promise I won't spam you with tons of emails. We just send it out twice a week. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And I can attest to that. You don't spam. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks again for coming on with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guest, Jennifer Kubani?
Oh, I enjoyed having her on with us. And it's nice to know that there are other individuals like yourself, Steve, that are operating independent media outlets. And what, 75 active journalists that she has representative on various college campuses around the United States. And there's 4,000 campuses, as you mentioned in your interview. So there's a need for a lot more of these individuals. But that gives me high hope, Steve. We definitely need, you know, we got the Chos and we've got some others up here in this neck of the wood. They're doing independent, on the street, conservative minded, just telling it like it is. And so hats
those
off.
Those are seasoned veterans who have been doing it quite a while. So the idea that there's a farm team of young, willing, anxious, open-minded, curious kids out there
I
is
love it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I love it.
So I want to read this article to y'all. American Public Schools, RIP, Rest in Peace, by Jeffrey A. Tucker, February 11th, 2023. Any of the bizarre features of the pandemic response can be explained by industrial self-interest, graft, power lust, confusion, and so on. One feature does not have such an obvious explanation: the closure of public schools in some places for as long as 2 years. The extreme low to minimal risk to the kids was known from very early on. They could have stayed in school the entire time as they did in Sweden. Scared older teachers, realistically at very low risk, might have found substitutes. There were surely other workarounds besides utterly smashing education. What civilized society does this? None. Well said, Jeffrey A. Tucker. Did a little homework. Results from the US consensus found that two Democrat-run states were almost tied for the highest population decline between April 2020 and July 2022 over any other state. I'm laughing because Steve just asked me this. I didn't want to tell him I knew. Over 1 million residents left New York and California over the 2 years, according to the LA Times. Census data shows 524,079 people left New York, and California lost 508,903 residents during that time, the outlet found. Comparatively, Florida and Texas gained the most residents, with the Sunshine State gaining 706,597 and the Lone Star State adding 884,144 residents between April 2020 and July 2022. California exodus continues as population drops by 500,000, Los Angeles Times. California saw a 6% rise in violent crime from 2020 to 2021, according to the Public Policy Institute of California. Let's play clip number one.
I mean, that's New York, uninvestable. Sorry, don't shoot the messenger, just telling you the way it is.
Yeah,
that's it, uninvestable.
Some pushback from our elected officials in New York
on
that.
I was just gonna say Kathy Hochul.
Yeah, but
I'll debate them any time of the day you want.
We would love to set that up.
Particularly AOC. She's great at killing jobs. She kills jobs by the thousands. You know, another New Jersey problem. Where did Amazon take their jobs? They took them away from her. She threatened to sue them if they created jobs. I mean, this is a reality. This is a reality that the business...
There's a little more to it, but let's not relitigate that.
Well, you know, sorry, just telling the truth.
He's saying what a lot of people are saying, especially what happened with that Amazon thing here in New York. Just
it's the state where I grew my kids. I mean, our family grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. We left there to move to Florida like everybody else is because it's such a tough place to... You know, this is a tough message. People really are critical about this, but somebody has to call it out because... This is a competition of states now, and we don't put money there anymore. We put it in other places, and jobs are created elsewhere. Over time, this is going to diminish New Jersey, diminish New York, diminish Massachusetts, and California out of business. Out of business. El Morte. No business there. You can't do business there. I don't know what that place is going to turn into. Maybe a tourist zone, but no business. Imagine San Francisco. You can't even walk at night out in the street. Sorry.
Talk about what's happening.
Well, they're doing a lot of South California advertising now. Come to beautiful South Cal, Slow Cal, they call it, on all the YouTube ads.
Huh. Well, that's Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, telling the truth. Love it. I love how the CNN journalists were trying to talk it down, Mr. Wonderful. We don't want the truth, but he gave it, and that's great. Both barrels. Homicide rates in the state jumped by over 41% and aggravated assaults by 18%, the fact sheet shows. Of the state's 58 counties, 37 saw violent crime rise in 2021, with rates in 10 counties increasing by 20% or more, PPIC found. At least 10 elementary and high schools in the Minneapolis Public School District and St. Paul Public School District in Minnesota did not have a single student meet grade level expectations in fifth grade math during the 21-22 school year, according to a Wednesday report by the Center of the American Experiment, an organization focused on state public policy. Statewide, 19 school districts did not have one student test proficient in math in 2022, Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment. That's on top of zero schools in Baltimore, Chicago, San Francisco, anywhere blue politicians are in control, and unions. Eric Kaufman had this to say: why school indoctrination is working and will make the Republicans unelectable in a generation, a thread based on my new Manhattan Institute report. Financial Times showed that younger generations are diverging from older ones by not becoming more Republicans as they age. Why might this be? U.S. Republicans vote share by age within each generation relative to national average. The boomers up 10 points, silent up 10 points, Gen X up 2 points, millennials down 10 points. Indoctrination, virtually all of over 1,500 18 to 20 year olds polled had heard at least one of eight critical social justice terms from adults at school. 90% heard a critical race concept, 74% a gender one. CSJ is a proxy for left indoctrination. Children getting lots of CSJ are far more liberal democratic than those getting none. Republican Party ID crashes from 61% to 30%, comparing youth hearing zero versus six plus concepts. Children with Republican mothers who are exposed to no CSJ identify 46% conservative and 27% liberal. Children with Republican moms hearing 6 plus CSJ ideals flip completely, 46% liberal, 21% conservative. 88% of youth from the most heavily Republican fifth of counties heard critical race and gender concepts in school. This is happening right under the nose of Republican parents and politicians. This is happening almost as much in private, parochial, and homeschool as in public school. School choice can work for few school choice can work for a few informed and committed parents, but can only affect indoctrination at the margins. Pupils taught these concepts believe them. Believe in white privilege jumps from 41% to 56%, in gender as chosen from 37% to 49%, in U.S. built on stolen land from 44% to 73%. Young people taught five critical race theory concepts are twice as likely to support affirmative action quotas and, for whites, to feel guilty about their race than those taught no CRT. CSJ in schools massively increases the fear of being expelled, punished, or shamed. 27% not exposed to CSJ reported fear compared to 68% exposed to six plus concepts. For Republican youth, the jump is from 27% to 84%, exclamation point. As a consequence of skirting fear into pupils, CSJ chills speech. The share of non-Black pupils saying they were uncomfortable criticizing a Black classmate increases from 29% to 43% with heavy exposure to CSJ. Thus, CSJ not only indoctrinates pupils, but increases fear, chills interracial interaction, and limits Black pupils' opportunity to hear potentially useful feedback from classmates holding them back. Our results suggest that only government reform of public schools of the kind pioneered by Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and Ron DeSantis in Florida can put a stop to progressive indoctrination. Last one, reforms should include mandatory curriculum transparency, political impartiality, with CSJ defined as political, and contextualization, i.e. teaching about left-wing and non-European excesses in history. End. I thought that was pretty cool. I wanted to share that with you. Why school indoctrination is working and will make the Republican unelectable in a generation. What do you think, Steve?
I think it's the whole idea of transforming society through the education system has been long, began in the 1850s, and has now culminated in the last 10 years of what we've seen. And it's time that, like I said, that we who love God, love conservatism, love our country, get back and get in power in the sense of taking over those positions on the school boards and wherever and transforming things. Because if we don't, it's only going to get worse until just, you know.
And it works, don't it?
It does.
100%. Unearthed emails show Rachel Levine discussing potential revenue from child sex change procedures. Do you know who she is?
Oh, yes, I do.
Or he is. Assistant Secretary for Health Rachel Levine discussed revenue opportunities resulting from hiring a gender clinic social worker while Levine was serving as Pennsylvania's acting Secretary of Health, according to emails obtained by parental rights activist Megan Brock and reviewed by the Daily Caller News Foundation. The pair discussed the potential return on investment and downstream revenue generation by social workers at gender clinics, particularly through surgical referrals. Quote, I am trying to give them some numbers to help them realize the eventual ROI, you know what that means, return on investment, for this necessary position, the doctor wrote. Even if the patients under 18 who go for surgery might be limited, the patients we start with will eventually be over 18, so I still think it's worthwhile. Of course, I think it's worthwhile no matter what. Financial, end quote. Financial motives appear to play a major role in advocacy for cross-sex medical procedures. John Hopkins Medical is lobbying Maryland to extend Medicaid coverage to transgender cosmetic procedures it offers, which could financially benefit the university hospital system. A professional association of plastic surgeons has been fighting against state attempts to restrict children's sex changes and pushing for enhanced insurance coverage of transgender procedures since at least 2017. Levine, with Penn State Hershey's Children's Hospital, also worked with LGBT activists to block legislation that would have barred the Hershey Company, which launched the campaign in Canada to promote International Women's Day, March 8th, by releasing five limited edition Her for She chocolate bars. One of the bars featured Faye Johnstone, a trans woman who is co-owner and executive director of the Canadian consulting firm Wisdom to Action, and who describes themselves as a queer, trans, and feminist activist. State funding from paying for child sex changes. Ugh. Clip number two, please.
So it is my honor to introduce Kalisa Wing, who has been in education for 16 years. Her journey into the teaching profession began after she was honorably discharged from the United States Army after 6 years of service. She served as a youth consultant for the Self-Expression Teen Theater under the United Way in Toledo, Ohio. After moving to Germany with her family, she began substitute teaching, then transitioned to a special education paraprofessional. She was a school secretary and eventually an administrative officer. She then taught eighth grade language arts and reading at Faith Middle School in Fort Benning, Georgia, and then was an elementary school assistant principal at West Point, New York, a professional development specialist, and is now a chief of diversity, equity, and inclusion. She is also the author of many books, so I suggest if she doesn't drop them today in her presentation, please Google them. But thank you, Kalisa, for being here today with us.
Listen to this.
Thank you so much. It is an honor and a privilege just to share space with you all today. As I was listening to all of those things, right? And it's a beautiful segue into this question that I often ask, which is like, who are you? So oftentimes we get caught up in what do you do, that you lose your identity about who are you. I was listening to a message today on my way back down south. I live in Northern Virginia, and the message was talking about truth versus beliefs, and it was just so, I'm sorry, facts versus truth. And there are like immutable facts that we deal with as a society on a daily basis. One of the things that they were talking about in the message was the fact is, yeah, the economy doesn't look too great. Looks like we're headed into a recession. But the truth is, you know, as a believer, I believe that God provides, you know, all my riches and glory, and I'm good.
Is that what you wanted, Steve?
She said, God provides all my riches and I'm good. Well, she's a heretic and a babbling idiot, as you could see. A recent audit found that K-12 schools operated by the U.S. Department of Defense are carrying hundreds of Racial Justice in America books that were written on the side by one of the DOD's diversity officials, raising questions about conflict of interest and self-dealing in the department. On Thursday, the independent watchdog organization OpenTheBooks.com published a report on their recent audit of the Department of Defense Education Activity, the branch of the DOD that oversees education curriculum for the minor children of service members. The audit found that as of January, 45 DODEA schools were carrying 606 books written or co-produced by Kalisa Wing, who you just heard from, who is DODEA's Chief of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. In a February interview with Military Times, Wing said she does not promote her books with DODEA and does not receive royalties from the sale of those books. Oh, really? Just a charity, eh? The DODEA has brought hundreds of Wing's books into its K-12 school libraries at a time when the military is facing criticism that it is promoting wokeness. And of course, taxpayer-funded Military Stonewall's investigation into controversial diversity official leading K-12 books. While DOD obfuscates, Kalisa Wing's racial justice propaganda proliferates, and she doubles down on her ethical and ideological controversies. March 2nd by Adam Andrewowski. Sorry if I butchered that. Name like Abramowitz, we do our best. ANDRZJEWSKI. That's a lot of consonants. Kalisa Wing, the Pentagon K-12 school diversity chief, is doubling down on her comments to tear down and uproot, unquote, the curriculum taught to the children of our military families. Despite public scrutiny, her controversial children's book keeps proliferating in school libraries, and ethical questions about her outside consulting work remains. All the while, the government has blown past its own deadline to review her employment. Wing has retained her job, and the Pentagon continues stonewalling in the face of questions from Congress. The Pentagon has investigated a lot of money invested a lot of money into Kalisa Wing's position as the first ever Chief of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Chief in the K-12 Pentagon Schools Department of Defense Education Activity. Kalisa Wing is highly compensated. The Pentagon admits to paying Wing as a GS-14 level executive officer on the federal pay scale between $126,233 and $164,102 in 2022. That's a Freedom of Information Act request source. We estimate that if Wing earned $160,000 this year, then adding 30% for the cost of benefits means that the position costs taxpayers $210,000 annually. For context, the base salary of the Secretary of the Department of Defense, Lloyd Austin, is $221,000. DODEA is charged with educating nearly 70,000 children of service members and other military-related personnel, many of whom have no other education choices when stationed overseas. How do you like them apples? Wow. I don't. And remember this? Former Baltimore mayor pleads guilty in children's book scandal. Former Baltimore mayor Catherine Pugh pleaded guilty to corruption charges on Thursday, a day after federal prosecutors unsealed an indictment accusing her of using a fraudulent children's book business to enrich herself and fuel her political career. Pugh is the second Baltimore mayor in the past decade to resign amid a corruption scandal. In 2010, Mayor Sheila Dixon stepped down after prosecutors accused her of stealing gift cards intended for the needy at Christmas to purchase clothing and electronics for herself. How nice. A jury convicted her of embezzlement. They have no shame. Wonder where Wing learned it. Clip number three, please.
For a crime. And by the way, if the U.S. media had swung behind the evidence in this story and pressed, where did this virus come from? Then it's at least potentially conceivable that scientists in the United States would have forced the government of China to release the information they had about the genetic makeup of COVID. Maybe we've had a vaccine that worked, for example, or a medical response that saved Americans' lives, but they didn't.
Where was Tucker in the very beginning? He wasn't anywhere.
That's a good point. I don't know why I put that in there. After the Roland Dahl text editing controversy that erupted in recent days, it is now the turn of Ian Fleming's James Bond novels to be rewritten. A report in UK newspaper The Telegraph reveals that ahead of the reissue of the Bond novels in April to mark 70 years of Casino Royale, the first book in the series, rights holders, Ian Fleming Publication LTD, commissioned a review by sensitivity readers. For example, in Live and Let Die, 1954, Bond's opinion of Africans in the gold and diamond trades as, quote, pretty law-abiding chaps, I should have thought, except when they drunk too much, has been altered to, quote, pretty law-abiding chaps, I should have thought. Another scene in the book, set during a striptease at a Harlem nightclub, was originally, quote, Bond could hear the audience panting and grunting like pigs at the trough. He felt his own hands gripping the tablecloth. His mouth was dry, end quote. This has been revised to, Bond could sense the electric tension in the room. A segment in the book describing ascended dialogue as, quote, straight Harlem deep south with a lot of New York thrown in, has been removed. Who cares, right? It's just words. Well, more on this next week, but ChatGPT heralds an intellectual revolution is the headline in the Wall Street Journal. Generative artificial intelligence presents a philosophical and practical challenge on a scale not experienced since the start of the Enlightenment. Wow. Do you think the woke corporation, Microsoft, is going to use the woke edited version for its AI or the raw and unfiltered original from a distant time? What will it do with Christianity? Nothing good. It has no soul, no God, but that person's who types the code. They would never do anything anti-God, would they? Like that Dr. Fauci reportedly publishing again, that's why I put it in there. Like Dr. Fauci reportedly pushing against the lab leak theory, despite learning in February 2020 that COVID-19 may have originated in a lab leak in Wuhan, China, the House committee found. How convenient if he controlled ChatGPT. Stay tuned for my thought of the week.
Well,
Welcome to my last quotes for the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, leave a comment. I'll read it on air. And thanks for doing it. Some editors are failed writers, but so are most writers. T.S. Eliot. A magazine, a relevant one, should be a sound, not an echo. Tina Brown, The Vanity Fair Diaries, 1983 to 1992. An editor is like a priest or a psychiatrist. If you get the wrong one, then you are better off alone. Toni Morrison. News is what someone wants suppressed. Everything else is advertising. Katherine Graham. Graham was an American newspaper publisher. She led her family's newspaper, The Washington Post, from 1963 to 1991. Graham presided over the paper as it reported on the Watergate scandal, which eventually led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, now owned by Jeff Bezos and a CIA shill. She also said, I mean, I think everybody in the world, all the young people in the world, went to journalism school and wanted to investigate everything. And I think they overdid it. I think that you have to investigate things. You have to be skeptical, but you shouldn't be vengeful. You have to be fair and you have to be careful. Katherine Graham. That's it for this episode. Really, really hoped you liked it. Thank you, editors Brandon Lewis and Jennifer Cavani, for investigating things, being skeptical, and not being careful. Until next week, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Go subscribe to all three. Peace in our time.
County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like
any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.